This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The TV version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Iraqi forces have begun a major battle to retake the city of Mosul from the Islamic State. Backed by U.S. air and ground support, the Iraqi government says it is closing in on the last major stronghold of the group inside Iraq. Kurdish Peshmerga forces are deploying from the east while Iraqi National Army soldiers head north. There are still 1.5 million civilian residents in Mosul that have been living under Islamic State rule for the past couple of years. Aid groups fear some residents may be used by ISIS as human shields. Meanwhile, the Iraqi government insists that there is safe passage for Mosul's civilians to leave the city. On the eve of the battle, ISIS released yet another one of its horror-filled propaganda videos showing the execution of prisoners. My guest is Dalia Wasfi. She is an Iraqi-American physician and peace activist who has written and spoken extensively on U.S. policy in Iraq. She's currently writing a book about Iraq. Welcome to the program, Dalia.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, how do you put this battle into context? Over the past couple of years, or really year or so, the Iraqi government, with the support of the U.S., has liberated, quote unquote, one major city after another from the Islamic State. Does Mosul really represent the last stronghold of ISIS in Iraq?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, because if we look at what's happened, for example, after the so-called liberation of Ramadi several months ago, almost immediately after the Iraqi government claimed triumph, there was the massive bombing in the Qurrata district in Baghdad that took several hundred lives, and Islamic State claimed responsibility for that. So whether they move or relocate or just set up, pretty much move their headquarters elsewhere, it seems to be quite a bit of fluidity, not only between areas in Iraq, but also Iraq and Syria. So this sort of fits into the overall plan that I see for U.S. policy in the region, which is really to keep continuous war going. We are actually arming both sides, whether it's arms and funds and technology, technological support to the Iraqi government. And we continue to pour arms into so-called moderate rebel groups in Syria, which end up in the hands of extremists, including ISIS. So this, in a way, they're launching this massive offensive to supposedly defeat ISIS, but I think this will really just shift the conflict to another area and keep it going.
Right. And that is, of course, the most important aspect of all of this, which is what's the plan for the post or sort of the aftermath of this, if the Iraqi government does retake control after they've, you know, killed several ISIS soldiers in the process. Presumably they won't kill everyone, unless, of course, they're trying to kill a bunch of civilians too. The understanding is that many ISIS soldiers will simply move into Syria. They might mingle among civilians. The BBC had an interesting report saying that Europe should be warned that there might be ISIS fighters among refugees that head to Europe, etc. What would happen to ISIS soldiers if Mosul is retaken? What can we learn from some of the past cities, as you mentioned that there, you know, we just expect more violence?
Well, as long as we're pouring arms into the region, and as long as we're creating a reason for people to oppose the Iraqi government and for the people there to oppose the Iraqi government and the U.S., you're going to have a counteraction. It's been like this for years. As long as there is suffering inflicted on a people, they will, and they are pushed to extremes, they will do whatever they have to do, if they have nothing left to lose, to try to defeat the people who inflicted harm upon them. What's interesting to consider, not only for what will happen to those who are fighting for ISIS, but also what will happen to Mosul as a result of this assault, which now we're being told could last for weeks or maybe even months. So you have the Kurdish Peshmerga who are involved in the battle, and the Kurdish government has an eye to expand the territory that it controls in northern Iraq and potentially incorporate Mosul and its oil into the Kurdistan region.
So by working with the Peshmerga, is the Iraqi government expected to basically pay a price?
Well, that, you know, this is where the U.S. comes in, as it's the superpower in place that can really act as an arbiter. And this is, you know, we saw this during the Saddam Hussein era, that the Kurds and the Kurdish leadership was used as a fifth column or a way to keep Baghdad in check, and to create friction. Now, the underlying issue for the Kurds is they want, many Kurds want an independent state, but the U.S. takes advantage of that for its own agenda, which is to keep the area in turmoil, and that way Western companies stay in charge of the oil. So there is it's a game that's being played of managing Baghdad, of managing the Kurds. There's also what's happening managing Turkey right next door. This is it gets very, very complicated, and we are manipulating the scenario as the superpower in the region. And this is what is really, again, we with our arms and political influence are driving the violence that's there today.
Will ISIS soldiers also simply head into Syria as this battle continues?
That is certainly a possibility. And actually, Robert Fisk wrote about that because the Kurds are, the Peshmerga are coming in from the east, and the Iraqi army and the paramilitary Shia forces are coming in up from the south, that this will push fighters back across the border into Syria. I mean, this is certainly a possibility, which actually, from the U.S. perspective, could work to their advantage in Syria, because then they will be more of a problem for Bashar al-Assad, whom we are threatening to depose from power. So this is, if you look at the state of the region today, really, for decades, it's been an issue of Western manipulation, but really looking from 2003 with the illegal shock and awe invasion, and we look at how accustomed we are now to major military aggression taking place, that this has just become the new normal. But this is, once again, so many people are warning that this is going to be a massive humanitarian crisis. A lot of innocent people are going to die. A lot of innocent people are going to be displaced. And the organizations that are responsible for these casualties, like the International Red Cross, Red Crescent, all they can do is say, please be careful with your massive violence. It's an unspeakable tragedy that continues to unfold amongst the people in the region.
And in fact, on that issue, as far as you can tell, what has life been like, or what might life have been like for Mosul's civilian population under the Islamic State? They've been living under that rule for a couple of years. Do we know from other cities that the group has occupied what those civilians might be undergoing?
You know, the analogy that has come to mind for rule under Islamic State is kind of like what happened in Afghanistan, where and the words of Malala Joya, who was so opposed, rightly so, to U.S. occupation in Afghanistan, that the people are trapped between the brutality of the Northern Alliance warlords, whom the U.S. was backing, between the brutality of the Taliban, and on top of that, they have the U.S. dropping bombs on them. And it's very similar. I think the case can be made that it's a comparable situation in Mosul, who for years suffered under the brutality of the conservative Shia government in Baghdad that was brought to power by the United States, that inflicted death squads upon the people. Then came the Islamic State, who equally deadly and torturous to the people. I mean, it's a daily struggle for survival. And now what they have to face is this massive violence that will be coming from the air, from the ground, from multiple different militias and paramilitary groups, including the most sophisticated and powerful army in the world from the United States. This is really it's unimaginable. And I have several friends whose family are still in Mosul, and they have nothing to do but pray and hope for the best, just hope for survival. It's now just basic survival.
And specifically, let's focus in on what role U.S. troops are playing. There was a sort of slightly confusing report from U.S. Army heads who said that troops, U.S. troops, will be in harm's way, and yet they are simply conducting support operations, that the Iraqi soldiers will be supported by, quote, a wide range of coalition capabilities, including air support, artillery, intelligence advisors, and forward air controllers. So as far as you can tell, how much support is the U.S., or what form of support is the U.S. giving Iraqi forces? You know, we get this, or we're given this image that this is first and foremost Iraq's fight, and we're simply there as supporters and advisors. But is that really true, or is the U.S. playing a bigger role?
Oh, well, certainly. I mean, the government in Baghdad would not be there without significant military, U.S. military, political, and financial support over the years since we helped bring it to power in 2005. I read one article that there are U.S., British, and French special forces present in Iraq now. So if it wasn't clear to anybody that this is a colonial agenda, we have the big colonial powers there. And certainly there's been technical advice, there's been training. The U.S. has been training special forces since even before the official withdrawal in 2011. And there's certainly, I mean, air support. The Iraqi Air Force has been trained by the United States, and many of the weapons and aircraft have been purchased by the Iraqi government from the U.S. So it's clearly it's the U.S. overall, as the most powerful player in the region, is certainly guiding what will happen. And this is actually quite beneficial to the U.S. politically at home, because you will have the blood being spilled on the ground, but as little American blood spilled as possible. And that was really what the problem was during the years of the formal U.S. military occupation, was that too many Americans were dying. Now we're just in, we the U.S. are just in overseeing and administrative and advisory positions, while everyone else is on the ground doing the dirty work. And this is really, that's politically, and speaking of politically, I think also this assault has been timed for the just prior to the November election here in the U.S. And we're told it'll go out for months, but I have a feeling that right around the election, there will be great success for the U.S. in setting back ISIS. So this is a very much a political game and a superpower game on the ground.
Certainly, President Obama wants to be able to say that he can declare some success on ISIS, at least in Iraq, before he leaves office. I want to turn to to the Iraqi National Army, though, and you mentioned that this is an army, of course, that's been trained by the U.S., and this is not an innocent army. The armed forces of the Iraqi National Army have been accused by rights groups of torture, and in fact, Amnesty International just released a report warning that those Iraqi civilians living in Mosul fleeing the Islamic State could be preyed upon by Iraqi soldiers of their own government, and tortured. How likely is the scenario? How relevant is Amnesty's fear?
Well, we've already seen it take place in the previous liberation agendas in Fallujah and in Ramadi. There was ethnic cleansing that took place, or if it's not ethnic, it may be ethnic, because there's a very strong presence of Iranian-backed militias, including Iranian fighters, who not only have been surreptitiously incorporated into the Iraqi army, but they're also fighting alongside them in the paramilitary forces. And so we've seen these ethnic cleansing campaigns taking place. The other aspect, there is a religious aspect to it as well, because some of these very conservative, ultra-religious groups and their militias who are in Iraq have already claimed that they are going to liberate Mosul to avenge the death of Hussein, which is, this is living in the, in 800 years ago. Is it 800? It's living back in the 600s, in the 7th century. This is an extremist view that this is now being, this is the agenda. This is how people are being built up to go into this war. So it's not only the influence of the U.S. as a superpower, but also the very strong influence of Iran, not only in the government of Baghdad, but also control of these paramilitary militias. And you have these longtime tribal people of Mosul, longtime, they've lived there for years and years and years, and now they are, this is basically foreigners coming into their city, allegedly to liberate them from one hell, and then inflict another one on them. So this is really, they have nowhere to run, and bombs falling from overhead. This is going to be a huge tragedy in the making.
What about the idea that we need to have a proper, you know, diplomatic solution, or just some kind of non-military solution to the Islamic State occupation? France, which is of course notably playing an active role in bombing ISIS targets in countries like Syria alongside the US, is going to co-host a summit in just a couple of days with Iraq to discuss how to stabilize the region. We talked about there not being much of a post-war plan, but apparently there is going to be some sort of meeting to sit down and sort of discuss things. It's unlikely that anybody from the opposing side, and certainly the Islamic State, will be invited into such a meeting. What do you make of this idea that there is some attempt by international leaders to actually make a plan of some sort?
Well, this is, I believe, the only solution. There is no military solution to the Islamic State. Islamic State was born out of the brutality of the invasion and occupation of Iraq, and then the funneling of arms and monies to extremist groups in Syria by primarily the United States and its allies. There is no military solution. You will only recruit more people when you inflict suffering. So some sort of political solution has to come to pass. In addition to that, the people who have to be reined in are the ones who continue to sell arms into the region. Now, I focus on the United States because I'm an American, and we're the greatest influence in or the most powerful influence in the region today, although Russia is certainly emerging as a counter superpower force. But if we look at the members of the UN Security Council, those five countries are now the biggest arms suppliers to the world. They were the ones who were supposed to prevent war from ever happening again. So the whole, we have to go back to basics about negotiation and diplomacy. And really, this is not a force. They're talking about a force of 6,000 fighters in Mosul, a force of several thousand, even 10,000, 20,000, to take control of a city the size of Mosul, which was initially 2 to 2.5 million people. Still, there are estimated 1 to 1.5 million still in there. This, you have to have tremendous either support from the people or tremendous military and financial backing. And that's coming from a number of states, but it's coming from the U.S., and that has to cease and desist. So that if they are willing to bring to the table the people who are benefiting the most from this, and that's the Western powers who are controlling the oil, and that includes Israel, the U.S.'s strongest ally in the region. Those people have to be brought to judgment in a situation where they can be held accountable. But what we've seen in the past 15 years is just no accountability for our crimes against humanity. And if we look at Afghanistan, we just on October 7th marked the 15th year of military aggression on that country. And we're in no better position than we were back then. First of all, the reason we went in was to get bin Laden, who's gone. The Taliban still controls most of the country. I mean, at some point, you have to recognize that we have failed policies, and that the success for weapons manufacturers and oil companies is not worth the price of the suffering that we're inflicting on the ground. Mm.
Well, Dali, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and putting this Mosul battle into context. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dalia Wasfi is an Iraqi-American physician and peace activist. She's written and spoken extensively on U.S. policy in the Middle East, and she's currently writing a book about Iraq. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.